Welcome to the Bordertown Podcast, the Flood Series. On July 11th, 2023, a state of disaster was declared throughout Vermont as intense and widespread rainfall dropped up to 8 inches of water over a 38-hour period. This led to catastrophic flooding throughout the state and left the entire downtown of the capital city, Montpelier, underwater. The Bordertown Flood Series will introduce you to some of the small businesses, community members, government officials, anyone in the community that is collectively experiencing this disaster. Today we welcome Marek Zayance. Marek, the Farm and Forest Community Coordinator for the Montpelier Parks Department, found himself at the center of volunteer activity as the city shifted the duties of the Parks Department to manage the hub, the main focal point of disaster response. Yeah, so we're good to go. So if we could start by however you like to introduce yourself.
Wonderful. Well, my name is Marek Zayance, and I'm a community member here in Montpelier, and I help out at the Parks and Trees Department on their staff.
Right on. Yeah. And did you say you've been in town for a few years?
Yes. Yeah. This is my third year in Montpelier, and I lived 1 year in Barrie before then.
Yeah. And did you come here to work, to do the work with the Parks Department or AmeriCorps?
Actually, I came here just because I wanted to try something new. And I was living in the Midwest and on the Pacific Northwest and found Vermont, thought it would be a really beautiful community to be in.
Awesome. Well, you know, for people that may not be from here, what I like to do is talk about Montpelier before the flood. So you, as someone that's selected to come here, as did I, just explain what it was about Montpelier that drew you here.
Absolutely. One of the things that really stood out to me was this combination of really deep community roots and a rural sense of living. Both of those together with a sense of social care about one another just felt so unique. And me being from the Midwest, I've had touches of that, but there's a very different vibe in some areas than here. And so I wanted that kind of pace of life, but also that care for one another. And I found it here in Montpelier.
Right on. When you selected it, were you like looking on the East Coast, driving around, or how did you literally find Montpelier?
Absolutely. So I actually had never been to Vermont and never been to this area, but I had just looked on a map trying to find little tiny communities and just had picked in the center of Vermont and Montpelier showed up. I packed my car full of everything. I drove here and had never visited before I arrived.
So a day in downtown Montpelier pre-flood, how was your experience with that? How would you describe that?
Absolutely. It was so community focused, especially with my time and the service that I did at the parks. At that time, I was in AmeriCorps. I got to know everyone in the community. What I love about Montpelier is you can walk around and you know everybody. And everybody contributes to society here in a different way. And it's really beautiful to have those connections.
Yeah. Yeah. I am so inspired by the work of the Parks Department, and there's a lot going on, but if you could summarize some of the stuff that's going on within the Park Department and then maybe some of the stuff you're directly involved with.
Absolutely. One thing that I love is the funky title that I have at the parks is Trails, Trees, and Tomatoes Steward, which I think is amazing. And nice. I think Alec Ellsworth, our director, came up with that, along with Layla Faustikon. And so what that entails for me is I help with the trail system here in Vermont, along with the whole team, especially in the central Vermont area. And we help at the community farm as well. We grow food for our citizens, which is such a radical thing and a really unique thing that we do. And then we also take care of all the trees on the street. Everything is under our purview for taking care of in terms of tree care.
Yeah, very cool. And so much innovative work going on within those three. But I have a particular bias to the farm. We do a community garden project with the middle school, and I've worked somewhat with Alec trying to get more involved to just expand our growing potential. So can you describe the last year or prior to the flood what that farm was?
Absolutely, yes. So we call it the Feast Farm, and it's a farm located not too far on the city limits there, out by the Agway. And the farm helps grow food for our citizens. So especially feeding the Feast Meals program run at the Senior Center. And for Meals on Wheels participants, the food is grown here by us and given to the senior center that is prepared into meals. All of that is a root to fork system where all of it is integrated here into the city. And such an amazing thing that we do. And then we also provide food at discount prices for people that are economically disadvantaged. So they can buy produce from us at a discount at our farm stand as well.
Yeah. Well, clearly some info on that farm we'll talk about in a bit, but let's talk about the devastating events that has kind of curtailed the direction we're all going in. So what was your experience when the floods came, a few weeks ago? What's it, a month or so ago?
Yeah, about a month now. So that was the rain started around on a Monday, July 10th is when the rain started coming. And at that time, I was actually on a day off from the park. That was one of my days off. And I was living at, I live up by the State House and saw the rain kind of flooding in and saw our communications with the team. And actually that night we saw, or that evening and through that day, we saw that the estimation of rainfall and we were shooting way past the target of what was expected. So the team began to mobilize immediately and started filling sandbags with the DPW, really trying to help prepare. But we knew that we had to do some work immediately to get ready for it. Mm-hmm. And so I came in later that day. And since that day, we started setting up downtown. We found a spot that wasn't flooded and set up there. And we've been there ever since as the Parks Department.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing how you guys kind of stepped into that role. And, you know, I was at the second forum I saw you there as well. Yes. And it's so amazing to think about how to kind of move forward, really with the lessons of how the community responded in that time, because it seemed like some really beneficial and positive things happened.
Absolutely.
So how did you guys shift gear, and then what roles did you start to play?
Yeah. We had the backing of the city to completely shift our responsibilities, which was, I'm so thankful that we've had that support. And really all of community services, because that's a bigger umbrella that the park sits under, shifted in some way their responsibilities and tasks. The Parks and Trees Department specifically was asked to help organize all of the volunteer coordination and keep what we called the community Montpelier hub alive and thriving.
Yeah.
So that had a lot of various roles based on the kinds of activities that we were doing throughout the time, including food, distributing supplies, coordinating supplies, coordinating between different cities around the Central Vermont area to get them supplies that we were getting. Mm. And then the day-to-day, the minute-to-minute tasks of getting people coming to our table and sending them out to somewhere else.
Yeah. By the time I was able to say my first hello to you and see that running smoothly, it was seemingly such a smooth operation. Mm-hmm. Can you remember day one, day two, how that started to really take shape?
Absolutely. Yeah. So actually the morning of the 11th, I had gone into our office to get ready for the day, and Alec just asked me, you know, hey, I've got this little data entry task. Do you want to, I think you could be good at it. Do you want to take that on? And that became the front desk at the hub. So it became a much larger task that became the coordination of people willing to volunteer and needing the requests, meeting the needs of the requests of the city coming in as well. And my task and a very small coordination of our team, including Layla, me, Jimmy, and other folks as well, were at that desk and learned the system of how we are getting information into our system and how to get it out very quickly to meet the needs of the community that, you know, minute by minute.
Yeah. And how was the response? You know, that's what I found really inspiring was the energy that showed up, people wanting to help, and then the ability for that to be organized in a systemic way. How would that work, you know, 3 weeks in? What was the typical day like?
Yeah. The typical day was honestly between 10 and 15 hour days for our team. Mm. And it was starting at the very beginning of the day, making sure that the tasks were up to date and ready to go at the first moment in the morning. The most beautiful thing that I've seen were people that were coming right when we would set up at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they were ready to go. And they were with us the entire day. Just task after task, ready to go, which was an incredible feat, even no matter how difficult the job I was asking them to go do.
Yeah.
So that was basically the start of the day, was getting ready for that immediate need. And then as we got there, we would send a team out to canvas the area to find out who was in need at that moment and what they were needing throughout the day, which was a huge help. And we relied on our Montpelier Youth Conservation Corps quite a bit, and they were just, I can't imagine the flood response without their help.
Yeah.
They were an amazing team.
Yeah.
So they did a lot of that work for us, finding out what was in need, and that would come to us minute by minute in our messaging system, and we would input that into where we needed to go for the day. Mm. In addition to that, we were monitoring constantly a phone number that we set up as the parks team that people could call, folks could call, ask any questions, or tell us what they need that moment.
Yeah.
And that phone number is still up and running, and we are still getting questions answered
daily. And once the local businesses found out, then they would they be more proactive and come to you or call you with the needs that they had?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And a part of that was really, really helpful was Montpelier Alive's part with the businesses. So Montpelier Alive really coordinated that smooth communication with the businesses around town. And then they knew where we were and they could find us and share with us what they needed at that day and throughout the week.
Yeah.
So we had hundreds of tasks, you know, in a day, and hundreds of people showing up that we could match them with.
Amazing. And now you mentioned as we were walking in here, perhaps a different fate of the farm. Can you tell me, the farm is right on a turn in the Winooski, right? That turns right prior to town.
Yes.
So very vulnerable. What was the impact on the farm?
Absolutely. It is at the convergence of the rivers there. Oh. And that is a very low-lying floodplain area, prone to flood. And it absolutely did flood, and quite badly, especially with the mix of all the toxic things in the water. And so it really got devastated. And the past 3 years of work that we put into it has to be rebuilt. And so we are going to do that, but we've decided officially that we are going to move the farm up to where the Elks Club area is and secure some of that land for the farm. So that is in motion right now with Charlie, our farm manager.
That's fantastic. So perhaps with that going on, the design and the discussion about that, clearly there would be, there's a strong community support for growing within that space. So in the absence of a final design, do you know how you're going to start placing, or you start small and grow, or how does that work?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So luckily with the designs, there is community space area set aside for recreation. And we have been able to move ahead forward just in that recreation area, putting the farm kind of laid out where it's going to go. So we're going to jump on that as soon as possible.
So you think this year before this winter, or maybe start cutting, getting into the ground, or just start moving equipment there? What's the first steps?
Yeah, I think the initial steps are the design of the farm. And that's where our farm manager is really coming into play. And also the piece of funding is really important. There's a lot of work to do, and it will take a lot of resources. So now that we have an area that we are looking to use, now we can start trying to grant and fundraise for it.
Very cool. I always personally thought, as that design or the discussion of that space goes forward, the land use should be the first conversation and build around that. So
yes,
it seems to be falling into place that way.
Yes, it is happening that way. And right. In addition to that, just this past year, we had put in a tree nursery at the farm, and that will be moving up to the Elks Club as well, part of the farm,
right on.
Which is where we grow all the trees that will be throughout the community later.
Yeah. And that's part of the adaptation conversation for sure, right? How do we, you know, if that space is going to flood often and wipe out years of work, maybe not the best thing to just keep doing it. Are there any other thoughts, whether it's park department or you personally, how do we move forward in a different way?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One of the things that was really beautiful have been these community meetings where people can come voice their views about what is sustainable now in this world of a climate crisis. And hearing those ideas, there's a lot of energy and a lot of very civil engagement, which is just really inspiring.
Yeah.
So we see that especially. And I think what is really beautiful about the city is everyone is open to input and really radical ideas here to make sure that we make this sustainable for the future.
Yeah. Well, that was exciting. And my daughter went, and she had a, you know, she was a little reluctant, like, well, what is it going to be? She's 13. And by the end of the night, she went to a different breakout than I did and participated and was just really fired up. So getting that younger voice involved, you know, I wonder, how do we maybe go directly to the schools for the strategy moving forward? And this might be off the path of what we're talking about, but anything come to mind? Because you guys work with young people through the AmeriCorps, and and that the Parks Department, how do we engage more younger people in the conversation and more diverse audiences?
Absolutely. It's so important to us at the parks. And one of the things you just mentioned is we have our Montpelier Youth Conservation Corps. That is a program that the Parks Department runs. And we run that through the school year as a school year program that the students can get credit for, as well as through the summer where it's a paid program where students can work with us. And that's what happened during the flood. And we consider them just like staff members, just like anybody else. And so all of their input is so welcome and helpful in all the decisions that we make together.
Yeah. So kind of moving forward, there, all the energy of the hub area there that you guys set up is, you know, it's the need, I can't imagine, has gone away, but the visual need perhaps has gone away. So hopefully an outcome of this conversation, these conversations, these podcasts, are to keep people involved. What are the needs? Are they still areas to volunteer? And how can people help right now and moving forward?
Wonderful. Thanks for that question. Yes, it has shifted a lot over the time that I've been sitting at that desk. I've seen it change a lot. And right now we're down to 110, but that will probably go away soon. And we will just move to an online presence. So we have, in the past 2 weeks, our team has set up a MontpelierHub.com website, and still using our phone number as well, that we monitor and we can communicate with the community to really meet the needs that they have. On the website, they can ask us any question that they want an answer to. They can also ask for volunteers still, and we can try and coordinate that still as needed. We also are asking for a feedback on how we can help in the future, because this long-term part of the recovery, I think right now we're in a lot of a question mark phase. How do I fund this? How do I get the materials that I need to move forward? And we haven't quite gotten to I can live again in the space phase, which I think we'll be able to help a lot with in the future as well. So right now we're really trying to focus on making sure every community member feels like they have someone they can go to and at least voice questions, hear from us, and share in figuring it out together.
Yeah. And how about you personally? What's happening now? Are you, you said you started with AmeriCorps.
Yes. Prep,
yeah. Can you talk about where you're at now and what's next?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd be very happy to. So yes, I'm with the VHCB AmeriCorps program, and I've been with the parks for a full year, and that happened during the flood relief time.
Right.
And then I transitioned out of that year. I finished that year, and there's a little tiny gap between years. And so I've been working for the city in between that moment. And starting in September, the second week of September, I'll be back on another year with the Parks team.
Awesome.
And I'll be helping out in the same capacity in some ways, but also shifting back to that focus of trails, trees, and tomatoes soon.
Right on. It might have a different look, but the same kind of energy.
Perhaps. Absolutely.
Same kind of focus.
Absolutely. Cool. Yes.
Well, is there anything that we didn't talk about that's kind of on your mind or something you wouldn't want to leave unsaid?
Oh, no, I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think emphasizing that I am just maybe a very public voice of everyone behind the scenes. I'm just one member of a very small member of a huge amount of people that have been at the community hub together. At one point, I think we had 14 tents there, and now it's just down to one from all walks of life. And none of it could have been done without every single person there, especially our core team at the parks that have just put in so much time and love and care to every single person, making sure every person feels heard. Mm. So moving forward, the community hub, I think, has shown us a lot about our community, the good parts and all the parts that we still have to figure out together,
yeah.
You know, especially in terms of the housing crisis and how expensive it is to live in Vermont. All of those questions are honest and bare, you know, they're very visible right now.
Yeah.
And I think what we've built together at the community hub is showing that we can really tackle these big tasks together. And if we can keep the momentum going, we can really come up with some new answers for how we address the issues.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. I really appreciate your time and your positive attitude and all the help you gave to me and our town during this time. And like you said, everybody that worked together from the Parks Department and throughout the town and all the town folks themselves.
So, wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much. And it's been an honor on our end to help out.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Is a new day coming on down the line? A lost friend trying to send a sign? Is it all just chance anyway you go? Or a message in the mystery?
Marek Zayants for telling us his story. And thank you for listening. If you need flood-related help, or if you are willing to help and want to know how, you can visit MontpelierHub.com or call 802-828-7108. To offer financial support for flood relief in central Vermont, please visit MontpelierStrong.org. Thanks to Ward Joyce for supporting this podcast. Visit him online at WardJoyceDesign.com. To learn more about Bordertown, visit BordertownOnline.com.